Welcome to BEN,
Blockchain Education Network.
The largest and longest running network of students, alumni, and professors excited about blockchain across the world. A podcast for students by students, sharing their vision that anyone, regardless of wherever they are in the world, will be able to use blockchain as a vehicle to create wealth for themselves and their communities. This is BEN,
the Blockchain Education Network.
What's up, everybody? I'm Drayson from the Blockchain Education Network, and I'm here with Suman, CEO and founder of Personal.ai. Suman, how are you doing today?
Good, Drayson. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. April's been an incredible month for our end, for Miami. It's just been insane over here.
It's awesome. I was there for Miami Tech Week last week.
Yeah, you were telling me that, so that's pretty cool. Maybe next time we can run into each other. But let's get into your company, because it is just so fascinating what you're doing, almost like kind of groundbreaking from what I'm reading. So tell me about Personal.ai.
Yep. Personal.ai is a unique AI for every individual. Our intention and our goal is that we tend to create a lot of life experiences every day and consume a lot of life experiences every day. But we often tend to not realize the full potential of all the data that we are creating. And specifically, this is AI in Web3 with the data ownership angle, because thus far, any of the existing Web3 data ownership has been fantastic, but there is a lack of utility. And our goal is to bring that AI utility for the data that people own and actually extract much more value from it. I can go through like many different use cases, but the fundamental motivation is to extract the utility of the data that people own.
Amazing. And can you just start going into maybe some examples, and we'll troll off questions from those examples?
Yeah, most certainly. So we are currently focusing on like thought leaders, right? So imagine you being able to have access to the minds and thoughts of Ben Thompson or Elon Musk. Like, what was going on in Elon Musk's mind last week when he was going through the Twitter acquisition? A personal AI of an individual is essentially trained on their data that they are creating almost on a day-to-day basis, everything that they're seeing, everything that they're speaking. And people are able to interact with somebody's AI. So you could potentially, as a consumer of a thought leader, for example, you could interact and ask specific questions or thoughts to this particular AI. And given it is an individual AI and it is a personal AI, it is personal and it is authentic. It is coming from the data that they own, and it carries the trust that, you know, AI is responding you with. So it basically unlocks for anybody to interact with anybody using this medium of AIs.
Beautifully said. And so how do we get, I know there was something on your website about syncing your data through text and through voice. So how is that process exactly to get my consciousness into the AI?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of pretty straightforward, right? So if you think about like what happens today in our, world, in our Web2 world, we do contribute lots of data. We write tweets, we write documents, we write Substacks, we write Mediums, we write Slack messages, we write Discord messages. We basically are writing and talking to several different people. And right now we are talking on Zoom, and it is recording and saving and uploading somewhere else. We are basically creating systems to capture all these like different mediums of the data that is being held up or captured in the platforms back to you. So the fundamental theory is, whether it be writing on any of these platforms, you will have an option to sync or upload those creations, those data, to your personal AI. So you at least have a record of everything that you are creating in this form of memory stack, we refer to it. And the beautiful part is the idea of the utility is to also aggregate a self-organizing memory or digital memory vault for you. So the syncing mechanisms are nothing but pretty much self-organization of all the content that you're generating on many different platforms, as you know, including audio and text at this time. Does it make sense on the syncing?
Yes, it does. And so how does this connect to the Web3 blockchain? I was reading through one of your decks and said you can monetize this, like earning through your AI. So how does that backend work?
Yeah, most certainly. I'll talk about the tech and I'll talk about the monetization. So essentially, once you have this like memory stack, which is actually backed by blockchain, so we will protect the privacy as well as the encryption with a key that is stored on OASIS blockchain. So every individual personal AI has a decentralized identity and a decentralized authorization. So people can technically own this data, but they can also be guaranteed that this data is not going anywhere, either by human or computer, unless they choose to be used by a model. So that's like from a technical perspective. And once you do have your own model, which is a self-service, you can create, almost like train your models on a day-to-day basis. Then you have the utility kind of extracted from your own, you know, memories or stack. We have a creator coin that we create for every individual personal AI. So that is not launched yet, but people would launch their personal AI. That technically means like launching their creator coin, and the utility attached to that creator coin is extracted by the AI, which is accessing their own thoughts and own minds that they want to share. So it's not only a new interaction medium for people to sort of like monetize their content, their creations, their thoughts, but it also, you know, gets people, I guess, closer in terms of, you know, accessing in a certain mind.
Wow, this kind of reminds me, I don't know if you've seen this show called Black Mirror, but this episode where you were talking to a person that was already passed away, but the AI kind of held their memories so you can kind of talk to them. Is that kind of similar to what you're recreating here? That function?
From a concept and from a model perspective, absolutely. Although our focus right now is unlocking creators, specifically around the thought leaders who are creating this content in multiple different platforms, and helping them not only aggregate the data and own the data, but create this new interaction medium in the form of their own personal AI that people can interact with them. So if you think about like platforms today, right? You know, you write all the tweets, which is great. And the idea of the AI on Twitter is aggregating the users and the data within the model so that way you can suggest like other tweets within the Twitter platform. Like same thing with the Medium, right? If I read a Web3 article, I am getting in another Web3 article recommendation from within the, you know, Medium ecosystem. So there is still like AI that is needed for big platforms where they're capturing the data to create the utility. But that utility so far is focused on recommendation systems, you know, click systems, ad systems, because that utility is going to gain, you know, for the business of the platform, right? Which is great. But now when we are talking about the shift into the Web3, there's all this data creation, data ownership that is happening. And yes, NFTs is awesome and fantastic, and there is a marketplace around it, and it's a huge market in itself. Now imagine the more data that you own in the Web3 is creating more utility. And for that utility to extract, you need that AI that is locked in the platforms right now. And that's what we want to bring. We want to bring that power of AI to the consumer. So now the utility is extracted off of every individual, because Web3 is all about, you know, data ownership, and now introducing the utility that is carried into their creator coins and tokens.
Another perspective I have on this is that you're also giving access to mentors that people didn't have access to before.
Exactly. You know? I mean, I cannot interact with Ben Thompson right now. He would like give a, you know,
Elon Musk
for that matter, right?
Yeah.
Arlen Legion. I mean, there are so many people that I follow on Twitter. It's all like passive, consumption. One, there are two problems with it. One, I'm not establishing a connection with that person. I'm passively consuming it. And the second problem is that consumption is not contextual to me, right? I need a contextual information that I want to consume from a AI of that person or a group of AIs, like almost like a greater interaction medium for me to access those people. So that's kind of what we are up to.
No, it's absolutely amazing. And so how is the progress on this so far? Like, what's a model that you're working on? Is Elon Musk one of the models? How's that conversation right now between the AI?
Yeah, so we have a few models that people are playing with. We have Ben Thompson's model. I don't have Elon Musk as of yet because it may get controversial, you know, in terms of who is open to it or not. But we do have like few other influencers, such as Luke Burgess and, you know, Francis West. We do have like few creators in the platform, call it like few thousands who are in the waiting list. But there are few hundreds of models that we created who are in the experimental basis right now to kind of understand the interaction, understand the fandom, understand like how they are creating this utility or the value to their consumer. So it's kind of where the process is in the system. Our token launch will likely be like, you know, end of this year, where we will be packaging and launching few creators AIs along with their individual coins pretty soon. So this is the progress. Oops, looks like you froze.
Oh. Yeah, your screen is frozen for me too. But let's just continue the conversation. I think the voice is still coming through.
You want me to repeat what I just said?
No, I captured it. I was able to hear you.
Okay, very cool.
That was just a video. So what inspired you to start this company? Were you always in the tech side of things? Were you always in the AI world? What was the inspiration?
I'm mostly a generalist. I'm an engineer by trade. I have passion to create experiences or products, if you will, mostly focused on people and mostly focused on consumers. I created a fintech product while I was at TurboTax, which is like basically automated payment system with using glasses. And then it was another startup, which is also a fintech startup, which is Smart Wallet. But Apple basically has good wallets now these days. This was like 10 years ago. But more generally, I think, you know, at the crux, I always try to identify problems that are close to consumers, close to human beings. In my previous company, it's called AIRA. It's a technology company for people who are blind and low vision. So rather than thinking about how to solve for seeing, we basically use the technology to augment their visual information around them. So I'm a traditional like Web2 company. I was part of like open source community, you know, when I was in the college. I introduced to blockchain actually early on, like 2011, 2012. I have some stories, but I'll probably save it for later. So now this company is about extracting that, you know, augmenting the idea of people life experiences, people lives at a greater degree. And the beauty is now we can go a step further with the core intents of privacy, with the core intents of data ownership, the core intents of this mind, or even like virtual mind or a digital mind, however you want to call it. It has to monetize for individuals as well. So I think the time is fantastic in regards to like how we want to do it. And ultimately, I came into this because it's a process for me, which is this core idea of how do you solve this problem of augmenting people's memories and life experiences so that way you get more value out of it, like more value out of the unknown that you're not capturing today. So that's kind of how I came into this company. And there's a story behind it. It's a personal story, which I can share, but I'll just pause there and see if, you know, if that answers your question.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So what are some of the challenges you're facing from the AI? Is there something that it needs to overcome to get to the next level? What are, you know, the obstacles you're facing right now to get to the next step?
Yeah, I think mostly it's about we are at the cusp of shifting the trends on how AI is applied in a business setting today versus a consumer setting that we want to do. In other words, one of the major challenges is the existing knowledge and existing understanding of what AI will do or how AI should be used for business efficiencies. A lot of existing AI is about aggregation of the data and the general models and creating a use case and the utility to benefit the platform. Yes, there is a consumer utility as well, but majority of it is associated with business, like business efficiencies and targeting people, clicks, recommendations, which is, you know, there is a utility in it as well, but, you know, pretty much it's all associated to the businesses. So one of the major challenges is this idea of AI for consumers, which, like in our case, for example, our models are like, you know, 120 million parameters, whereas a general model or a GPT-3 model is around 170 billion parameters. So for us, the scale is more like more horizontal, whereas, you know, in the existing, like, you know, methods people are used to are like very vertical, right? So there is a shift, and there is a technological shift that is happening. And for us to be able to scale horizontally, you know, there are barriers on like hardware, for example. Why hardware? Because of the demand is very vertical focused. You know, all the GPUs and all the business models around the hardware are focused on like large models. Whereas when we run like individual models on one GPU, it becomes like costly, right? So, but the good news is the technology is also progressing to run like many models on one GPU. So there are a few challenges in terms of making it work. And then just generally idea of how do you create ownership, guarantee the ownership of the model to the user. And that's where Oasis Labs come into play, which is fantastic for us because not only it guarantees the data ownership, they also have secure enclaves where we can basically run compute of the models in a secure environment that is backed by blockchain and the keys. So those are like few things that I can mention in terms of like technological challenges and as well as, you know,
but as the years go by, it'll get easier to be said as technology.
Oh yeah, of course.
More efficient.
Mm-hmm. You're definitely riding the wave of hardware becoming cheaper and more powerful, right? And data ownership and the capture of the data becoming more useful because there's more IoT devices, more phones, more devices, you know, that will be at our homes. And because of the privacy reasons and there is a push towards privacy, data ownership becomes even more critical, right? So all these different trends are giving us an indication that, hey, the future utility is carried or created by capturing more of your information, owning more of your data, creating more of your utility for you at your homes, in your devices.
Excellent. Now, I want to ask a question that's a little bit more, I guess, curative with the technology that you have. But as we go forward into the future, you have more models, more AIs of different thought leaders, different people. You have like, a bank of this. Is there an AI that kind of is combining all that into one massive
consciousness? It's a the way we think about AIs.
Yeah.
Is these models are like individual focused, right? However, what you are probably seeking is achieved by not the data aggregation and creating a model of it. But we tend to think about it as there could be an intelligence on top of this individual AI models that are being built. In other words, because we are going to create like a collective intelligence or a general intelligence, or there will be a motivation for it, it doesn't mean that these models need to be created only by aggregating millions and zillions of data. So we think about it as from a experience level, from a understanding level. So one of the experiences that we have that we haven't launched is essentially you would basically have like AI launch, like this is the place where all the AIs will be participating, and you would have specific topics. Like, let's say if I'm interested in Web3, I would tend to or choose to participate in the conversation with, you know, let's say Chris Dixon's AI, Ben Thompson and Lee Chen, and, you know, some of the other people, and I would create this group, this hangout. Now there are like AIs in a hangout, there are humans, and I would go in the conversations. And I would have multiple different like responses based on, you know, multiple different people, right? It's an aggregation of this collection thought at a higher order. So that's kind of how we see that there is a higher order AIs as well that will be created, but not at the expense of losing the individual authenticity and individual ownership that is coming from personal AIs.
Okay, got it. We can start asking some final questions. So if I wanted to create an AI for myself, how much information do I have to feed it for it to become, you know, like, oh, wow, that's Drayson's AI, to make like a family member or a friend? Like, how much do I have to talk to it? How much documents do I have to feed it? How much accuracy does that need? Could it get confused if I talk about music and then I talk about this, you know, because I'm very multidimensional. So how good would this AI nail me?
Oh, very fantastic question and good question as well. That's where I think the power of our work will come into play, and how we created models than what exists out there. These models are designed to have like time component to every piece of the data that you create. So in other words, us people have multiple different contexts that is happening in our lives. You may be talking about food one time, and you may be talking about Web3, and you may be talking about AI. These are all different contexts. So these models are actually designed to understand various different contexts in the context of the time of when that information or the data that was created. Because the fundamental insight is around creating personal AI, which comes down to how we structure the data, which goes back into the inference from like how people remember and the memory associated with individual person, right? So it's not just about just answering any questions from, you know, your aggregation of data. It's about that relevant to that point in time. So if I ask Drayson personal AI, what do you think about Web3 today? And what do you think about Web3 one year ago? It has to have different context, different meaning to it. So it carries that. So that's like one thing. And the second thing you asked is how much data is needed. That's also where like some of our superpower comes in, which is we were able to take like basically, we call it like 1,000 memory blocks. So a memory block is like half a page. So consider like, you know, two paragraphs. So if you have like 500 pages from a document side, because you refer to document, that's how much is needed to get your own model up and running. But then once after 1,000 memory blocks has hit, every incremental data feed in, you can have like incremental update to your model. So even there is a science to how we, you know, kind of do this incremental modeling based on like continuously pushing the data in.
Wow, it's incredible technology. And when do you feel this will be like fully fleshed out, like in everyone's homes or access for all consumers?
I mean, I would want to be like in 10 years from now, I believe, or we want to get to a point where every personal AI, everybody has a personal AI in their pockets, and it's creating some sort of a utility based on their life, their use cases. Obviously, it takes time to evolve. And our current focus is thought leaders and the creator. It also ties very well with the adoption into the Web3 and how we want to do the business on the data ownership and the tokenization. So I think within 10 years, the idea of like, hey, I have my own economy, I think will be pretty straightforward for a lot of people. It's like having your email account or Facebook account is kind of how I think about it, or your YouTube account. You know, anybody can be an influencer today and kind of like, you know, start making economy, right? But now it will move to Web3 world. I mean, our approach to like going to market, I mean, as a business is like starting with the creators, doing the most impact possible there, create or increase this access between people and thought leaders, get the creator coins like rolling and create that value out of the utility, you know, not just the data ownership. And then move to the other segments of population to the point where it can be super broad for anybody to create their AI.
Amazing. And so I'm guessing, because I've used some AIs before, mostly for like writing and stuff like that.
Sure.
So for example, those AIs, what they do is like they also can change the tonality of your voice and stuff like that, of the text. Would your AI also do that? Hey, this is Drayson, but in a confident mode, in a sad mode, in a dreamy mode. Can that also be applied and stuff like that?
Yes, absolutely. So in the example of a speech, like right now my AI is capturing, the system is designed to take all this like unstructured data that you are spitting out, either by talking or typing somewhere else. It comes into the system and it goes to several different transformers. And the transformer's job is to understand the data and structure them and understand the context inside it, such as, you know, what are the key people inside the context? Are there key topics in there, key context that is associated with it, as well as emotion that is tied to it, right? So during the process of creating your like memory stack itself, which is the collection of your memory blocks, there is a self-organizing structured data that, you know, the AIs are doing, right? Now, once your own model is created, which is a conversation slash generative model, combination of conversation slash generative model, then like, let's say if your style on generating tweets is different from your style on how do you write emails, you can apply those specific styles of what your AI is potentially generating content for you or responding for you in that style or in that emotion. You cannot like apply your own style unless and until you have some sort of a input to understanding of what your style is and where, like, you know, how do you behave differently where. I mean, because my style, my Twitter personality is entirely different than my conversational personality. Yeah.
So in terms of like maybe some ethics, I feel these AIs, well, in general, I feel technology is just very morally agnostic. You know, it depends on the consciousness of the user, whether it goes a good direction or bad direction. Sure. So if this AI starts taking information from, let's say, someone that has bad intentions and things like that, like, how do you safeguard these, quote unquote, like, bad consciousnesses so they don't spread?
Yeah, I think you said it right. I think there are always players who will have bad intentions and who will have good intentions. I think as developers and builders of technology, we would have to make sure we put like right controls in place, right? For the fact that we are building in Web3 and there is an element of security, the element of privacy, there's an element of ownership, that itself is to a degree designed to set the guardrails of like misuse, for example, right? Because unlike today, like for example, if you have a deep fake of Tom Cruise, right, it's unlikely that we will know like what kind of data that we need to, you know, creating the deepfake of Krampus. And our intention is, it doesn't matter what AI response it is, it has to have an association, a responsibility of what data influenced that response and who is that owner of that response. You know, I mean, to your question, I don't think we can control it entirely for the misuse, but I think we put systems and designed and the architecture specifically with this goal, holy grail idea of like AI and Web3 has to give additional transparency to what these AIs are doing and who, what kind of response is generated from what AI and who is the, what is the fundamental or source identity for that particular data, because we are able to associate that, you know, down to the memory blocks. That's why we call it like grounded AI. It's not just like, oh, okay, I'm getting this response, I don't know where the hell it's coming from, right? So that association is important. That's, I mean, there's even, you see, there's a lot of hearings and talks about AI and AI ethics and, you know, laws around it. It's all solving for the same thing, which is like transparency, like, you know, bias, like eliminating the bias. And the beauty is we are architected to do exactly the opposite. So, you know, whatever comes out of that, I guess, regulations, we should be at the forefront of it in a way, in a good way. Yeah.
Wow. Amazing, Sumi. Well, I look forward in a couple of years when this AI is very developed to be working with myself, especially with music, because I produce and stuff like that. So if AI can like shoot me conversation to back and forth as I make music or a business, that's just phenomenal. Yeah. And that's using it for the good. So I look so much, very forward to that. Is there any way that people today could start playing around with your AI?
Yes. So it is in the beta stages. We do have sort of a, almost like a process. Like we want to make sure it gets into the right hands for the thought leaders. So you can go ahead and, you know, and create the profile and we have a system to open it up and we will work with them to create their AIs and their motivations, as well as, you know, work them through potentially launching their creator coin. So we have like few openings that we are recruiting right now to create and launch over the next 6 months to 9 months.
Excellent.
Yeah. So personal.ai. Yeah. Of course.
Any final words you want to say for the audience before we go?
Let's see. I mean, I think it's mostly like crypto Web3 audience, right? I'll say this. Like so far, I think we've been doing pretty good job in our industry to create this idea of like the ownership of the data. You know, NFTs is a good example of that. But it doesn't have to be just that. It can be like general data and general thought data as well. I think what's missing in Web3 right now is the utility. And guess what? That utility is actually locked into the AI. And that's what AI does for a lot of these platforms. So we need to bring AI into the Web3. You cannot shy away from it. we just got to figure out like what are the right architectures to be able to do that. And yeah, so I think like, you know, our goal, our job is pushing the utility of AI in Web3 and solve the problems at the same time and create like meaningful connections between people.
Beautiful closing remarks, Suman. Appreciate your time. Really appreciate your time. If you're ever in Miami again, let me know. You know, grab lunch, introduce you to cool spots, cool people.
Yeah.
And yeah, we'll be talking.
Yeah. I'll be in Miami for sure. That's the place. Yeah.
Where are you up? Where are you from right now?
Yeah, in San Diego.
San Diego, okay, excellent.
Yeah, in San Diego. There's a reasonable like AI community as well as kind of a blockchain community here. So we decided to kind of stay here for a while, and most of the teams are remote anyway. So,
yeah, the mayor here is trying to make Miami the crypto capital of the world.
Yeah, oh, I have to tell you a story. So Miami City is an IRA city. I was telling you about my previous company for people who are blind and low vision. So Miami is one of the first cities that made IRA accessible, which is like basically any blind person can roam around in Miami, you know, using IRA service for free. They don't have to have charge. So, yeah, Miami is kind of like at the forefront of doing that. Now many cities are following, so it's just pretty cool.
Yeah, very innovative. I was there when the mayor opened up the first blockchain center in Miami.
Yeah.
Talked about how we're going to integrate crypto in the city. That was like 3 years ago. And I'd love to see people who keep their word, you know, and it's happening.
Cool. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Thank you again for your time, Suman. I'll send you an email with more information about other things I can connect you with, like maybe press and things like that, to get the word out about your company. And again, thank you for what you're doing.
Thanks a lot, Rezan. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too.
Keep up all the good work.
This was another episode of BEN,
Blockchain Education Network.
Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes. Also, keep up with us on Twitter and Instagram @blockchainedu, and visit our YouTube channel for more valuable blockchain content.